Hi, this is Kendall Boyson, professional life and recovery coach, and you're listening to Encouragementology, the practice of instilling hope. Good evening and welcome to Encouragementology. Thank you so much for joining me tonight. We are talking about staying connected, reaching out and staying connected. I'm talking to you whether you're in need of reaching out or you need to be more intentional about reaching out. This show is for you. We all need each other. I would like to say now more than ever, but I'm sure every generation has said the same thing. When we clung to each other for survival, we were still probably feeling the pangs of distraction. But now, in a world where independence is encouraged and even celebrated, is the time to understand the power of connections. Showing love and empathy for another human being, being able to communicate with them and share, is what makes us human. Let's not lose that, shall we? So many of us feel the needs of others, but we're fearful to reach out. We think, maybe they don't want any help. Maybe they'll think I'm butting in. Why do I think I have all the answers? Maybe I should wait until they reach out. The flip side is the person needing the help. I hate to be a bother. Maybe they'll notice that I'm down. I know they'll think I'm a loser if I ask for help or direction. Why do I always have to be so needy? Maybe I should wait until they reach out. Now we've entered the waiting game. Wanda Mills, 90 years old and alone, wrote a note to her neighbor. She put it in her neighbor's mailbox. Would you consider to become my friend? I'm 90 years old, live alone, and all my friends have passed away. I'm so lonesome and scared. Please, I pray for someone. We've all passed people sitting alone and have had that thought. I'm sure they just want to be by themselves. Well, I read an article in Prima, Understanding Loneliness and the Power of Connections. I'm very passionate about this subject, and most of my platform is all based on communication and keeping connections. We live in an era where it's easier to text a stranger than to say hello to a neighbor face-to-face, and more common to receive likes on social media than in-person compliments. In a world where we are so digitally engaged, we need real human connection more than ever. Sure, technology makes it easier than ever to learn and explore, but at what costs? Loneliness is a normal human emotion when temporary, but persistent feelings of isolation can be detrimental to our health. And in the last 50 years, rates of loneliness have doubled in the United States. In a survey of over 20,000 American adults, almost half of the respondents reported feeling alone, left out, or isolated. What's more, one in four Americans shared that they rarely feel understood, and one in five people believe they rarely or never feel close to people. Recently, the U.S. Surgeon General declared loneliness a growing health epidemic. At a time when people are more connected than ever, thanks to technology and social media, rates of social isolation are rising at alarming rates. What if the most dangerous thing for our health is not disease, but a lack of meaningful human connection? Would you think about it differently? You can change the quality of your life by nurturing your human connections. Really? Could it be that easy? Studies show that human beings who experience prolonged isolation became unstable. In the short term, those who feel loneliness are less likely to achieve quality sleep and thus experience challenges in reasoning and creativity. In the long term, people who experience prolonged loneliness are at a high risk for cardiovascular problems and even premature death. Research suggests that loneliness can even impact our genes, with emotional and physical impacts of loneliness triggering cellular changes that alter gene expression in the body. All this isolation isn't just changing our here and now, it's dramatically altering our future generations. Loneliness affects productivity in the workplace, leading to less job satisfaction, which was reported by lonely individuals, and a higher rate of unemployment. And according to a recent study published in the Harvard Business Review, employees who experienced higher levels of loneliness in their personal lives also reported fewer promotions, less job satisfaction, and a greater likelihood for frequently changing jobs. Lawyers, doctors, engineers were reported at the highest levels of loneliness. So what causes it? I mean, typically we understand you're by yourself. You might get lonely, but it's deeper than that. Get this. The cycle of loneliness is self-perpetuating. As loneliness can be caused by our overuse of technology, it can lead us to be more compulsive with our technology. We're using this as a coping mechanism. So when someone feels lonely and is longing for human connection, they may grab their digital device to comfort them, like that quick comfort. Reading something about someone might make you feel closer to them, but it actually makes you feel more on the outside and more lonely. When we experience loneliness, the feeling is real and it's detrimental to our physical health. We are social creatures who constantly dream, wonder, and create. Our minds are talking all the time. But when your ideas and conversations are only shared with yourself in your own head, you may have a tendency to exaggerate and create a negative narrative that isn't really even true. According to the National Science Foundation, an average person has about 12,000 to 60,000 thoughts per day. Of those, 80% are negative. And 95% are repetitive thoughts. Think about it. You talk to yourself in your thoughts more than you talk to anyone else. I would like to think that they're all pep talks and affirmations of gratitude, but based on that research, that can't be true. My guess is a combination of self-doubt, rumination over the past, and a healthy dose of assumptions mixed with worry. Sound about right? Who is there in your head to give you a differing opinion or to talk you off a cliff? Who is there to give you a pep talk and tell you everything is going to be all right? Just hang on. If you don't reach out, then only you. Dr. Julia Scalise wrote an article for BrainSpeak, How Negative Self-Talk Sabotages Your Health and Happiness. Quantum physicists state that our thoughts create our reality. Would you buy that? Dr. Candace Pert, who discovered the opiate receptor in our brain and is also the author of Molecules of Emotion, Why You Feel the Way You Feel, says that our emotions or what we feel trigger chemical responses. Feelings and thoughts release neurotransmitters that affect our state of well-being, promote positive or negative moods, impact our organs and system function from multiple feedback loops. Dr. Norman Deutsch, author of The Brain That Changes Itself, states that the brain can literally change its function and structure just by what we think or imagine. Thoughts, perceptions, and activities literally turn genes on and off in our bodies, as well as it stimulates a parade of other chemical reactions. So that's a good start. You want to change the way you feel? Change the way you think. Isolation is real. Loneliness is real. But you have the power to change your perception and to take action. So what happens when we have these ongoing conversations with ourselves? Well, stress combined with negative self-talk increases the release of catecholamines such as dopamine, epinephrine, and norepinephrine. Catecholamines are hormones that are released by your adrenal glands. These substances act as neuromodulators in the central nervous system as hormones in the blood circulation. These will elevate when there is perceived danger or threat. So that's super important, but they're also affected by negative self-talk. Cortisol is a stress hormone. It is an elevated byproduct of stress and negative thoughts or self-speak. Elevated cortisol, especially if chronic, over and over and over, can decrease the actual volume of the left prefrontal cortex of the brain, which is the part of the brain associated with positive emotions. The more stressed out you get, the more you're suppressing this, the harder it is to feel happy. Just thinking or talking to yourself, either positively or negative, has an effect on all physical structures in our body. Not just our mood or emotions. Circulating neurotransmitters and hormones create a feedback loop, impacting cardiovascular health, digestion, weight management, along with mood, motivation, anxiety, interest, and drive. Practicing positive self-talk has to start with an awareness of your current state. How do you feel? Be honest here. It's easy to say, things are fine. I like being by myself. I'm a loner. I don't care what other people think or feel about me. Even though it's important to embrace your alone time, everyone craves human connection. So it starts with letting go of this defensive shield and being real. How are you? Take notice of your interactions. How many do you have each week or each day? Are they meaningful or more robotic? It's easy to go on autopilot with our day-to-day and miss so many opportunities to share meaningful moments with another human being. Now, look at your list. Is it possible to be more intentional? Go out of your way to connect with another person or make yourself open and available to connect to. Wanda Mills was not only lonely because she lost family members and friends, but she was also alone because she didn't reach out. People passed her by assuming she didn't want to be bothered. Are you eating lunch in the corner with your nose buried in a book or your digital device and wondering why the gang doesn't invite you for coffee or happy hour? Are you taking lunch in your car and wondering why your coworkers don't see how in pain you are? Life is passing us by at a rapid rate. People are pulled in a bazillion directions, and everyone is struggling with something. You can't, and I repeat, you can't assume people, even family members, know that you are hurting. You have to open the door to help. To prime the door, you need to get comfortable with just meeting people. It's hard to ask for help when there's no one to ask. As your social circle shrunk over time, life gets busy. You move around, change jobs, dissolve relationships. You're hyper-focused on your children, not comfortable anymore with mixing and mingling in the bar scene. All of a sudden, you look up, and here you are with limited acquaintances and just a few friends. It might be time to exercise your social muscle and push yourself out there a little more. Nick Notis is a dating and confidence consultant who put together a successful exercise plan to help you get over your fear of meeting new people. Some people are just timid. They're not really sure what to do. So here's a wonderful exercise plan. First of all, get out of the house. This is the first step. If you have a severe case of anxiety, you just need to be in an environment where you're surrounded by people you could talk to. That's the first step. Take a walk outside. Get some exercise. Take in the sights and look at the architecture. Go to a place or event where you'd have fun no matter what. A concert, a museum, a coffee shop, whatever. The important part is just put yourself in that place. Can't make it happen if you're not even there, right? Then become comfortable with eye contact and smiling. This is so important in this day and age. And I find with people really lost in their technology, they have a hard time doing this. So practice making eye contact with people on the street, in the shops, in the restaurants, until you feel it is natural. If they make eye contact with you, smile back at them. Try not to break eye contact. That's pretty difficult. It's kind of awkward, but until they do it. This exercise reinforces that many people will want to engage with you if you give them the chance to do so. Greet everyone. Hold the door open for someone and say hello. Walk down the street and say, how are you? When they respond, wish them a good day. Or even just good morning or nice day, isn't it? You'll see how many people walk around with serious expressions on, and instantly they light up when someone just greets them. It can really make someone's day to have a human connection. Actually talk to working people. Speak with store clerks, cashiers, bank tellers, baristas, or any other employee that you meet. They generally have to be polite. So it's a safe way to practice conversation. The goal is to get past the simple hello. Ask them about their day. Talk about the game. Make an observation of something around them, something humorous or interesting. Then push yourself to hold a conversation for more than just a few seconds. You know, sometimes we get stuck with, hey, how are you? Fine. How about you? Great. And that's it. Maybe give a little more detail. I'm having a great day. I can't believe the sun is shining and it's, you know, almost the end of March. Or that's really a weather conversation. But you could also say, I'm having a great day. I have an important meeting later and I'm really excited about it. So I'm getting some coffee to fuel my, you know, whatever it might be. Try and go a little bit deeper than what everybody already knows on their weather app, okay? Give genuine compliments. Find something you genuinely appreciate about a stranger, maybe what they're wearing or where they are or what they're carrying, and compliment them on it. Do this in passing with a confident voice and smile. After that, you can try going up to someone and complimenting them directly. Once they acknowledge the compliment or say thank you, you can wish them well and leave the interaction. Set your own time limit and walk away from them. For many, their approach anxiety is not so much about the actual approach, but the fear of rejection and having to maintain a conversation. Are you like that when you're at a party or a gathering? You're like, oh, don't say hi to me because I'm going to have to keep it going. I once had a friend who really asked me not to introduce him at gatherings because I'm an over-introducer. It's just me. I'm a social butterfly. I want everybody to know each other, everybody to feel connected and comfortable. So I do over-introduce. And it didn't dawn on me that that might not be good for everybody. So he actually asked me not to do that because then he felt this weight of responsibility to remember their name and next time he saw them in public. So I'm going to push him on that. Tell him to get out of that comfort zone. And it's really exercising that muscle. But you could commit to leaving all your interactions after 30 seconds to a minute. So you could say, oh, I have to get going. It was nice meeting you. Have a great day. You can take charge of that communication. Ask functional questions. Imagine you were lost in an unfamiliar place. You probably wouldn't feel nervous about asking someone for directions. That's because you're not trying to get the person's approval. But when we see someone we want to connect with, we have this mindset of winning that person over. Suddenly, we're terrified. So instead of having the object to succeed, just aim to get information. So you could ask for the time, ask for directions to somewhere like a store or a train station, or get an opinion on the new latte or clothing or anything else in the store. If you don't need any of these things, just fake it. This isn't meant to be a long-term solution, but it gives you the practice you need to move into more real approaches. So many times we hide behind social media. You know, we can be really sweet, put lots of love on someone's post, even offer them words of encouragement, and then we see them out in public and we turn the other way. Why do we do that? Why are we afraid of going a little bit deeper with that communication? How about while traveling, be a tourist? A non-annoying tourist. Avoid using the internet to plan your trip and force yourself to rely on the locals. Ask someone where you can get the best coffee or the best lunch. Ask them maybe some non-traditional sites that you would like to see. Ask them where the best biking or hiking trails are. Or ask what cool events are there going on during the week. Almost everyone responds warmly to this. They want to be sure that their culture is represented well, and that you're enthusiastic about it. often the conversation leads to them asking you what you're doing. And maybe this would be an opportunity to ask to join groups, maybe team up, right? You could even suggest things like, I'd love to hang out with some fun people while I'm here and experience the best this city has to offer. You'll be surprised at how many people extend an invitation. It's a great way to meet other people. Even when you're on vacation, not only meeting the locals, but meeting other tourists. You know, maybe ask to sit with them at dinner. Call out your excuses. Whenever you see someone and you want to talk to them, our brain starts feeding us these lies, this fear. They wouldn't want to be bothered. They're not my type. I didn't want to talk to them anyway. Challenge these thoughts in that moment. How do I know they don't want to talk to me? I don't have any clue if they're my type. I don't even know them. I do want to talk to them. Otherwise, I wouldn't be stressing over it. Deconstruct your limiting beliefs and leave no room for excuses. Admit you're scared. If you're still making excuses, accept you're just afraid. Our anxieties are often worsened when we try to avoid them and fight against them. Reinforce yourself that it's okay to be scared. Tell yourself, I'm just nervous and that's okay. This is normal. Everyone feels this way and there's nothing wrong with that. Confidence isn't the absence of fear. It's taking action in spite of fear. Relax and deep breathe. Slow your heart rate. Get a handle on yourself. Put yourself out of the flight mode. Don't worry about going up to anyone for a few minutes. Just chill out. Take your time. When you're feeling better, you can try it again. Repeat as necessary. Trying to try is still progress. Talk to yourself in a silly voice. Another tactic for getting over your internal monologue is repeating your fears in a silly voice or accent. I love this one. Even though I'm rarely nervous to meet anyone, I'm still going to use it. This can take away the intensity, get you laughing, and show your brain how absurd its worries are. Sometimes we need to remind ourselves that we're just talking to someone, not going to war or battle. Put your money where your mouth is. This is a fun game you could do with a friend. Entrust that friend while you're out. Now, this would be more of a networking. If you were out networking, you could give your friend, let's say, $60. For each person that you introduce yourself to, they give you $20 back. If you don't approach, you lose the money. And you have to be serious about it, because if losing $60 won't motivate you, increase the wager to something that will. Challenge a friend to a game of words. Decide on a single word for both of you, one that you can pick, any kind of word. It could be something not vulgar, something just funny and obscure, like canoodle or fire truck. The first person who can use the chosen word in a conversation wins. You can wager lunch, money, or anything that's motivating. For example, wow, it's hot. Someone needs to get a fire truck up in here. Aw, you don't want a canoodle with him? Pretend to be a fictional character. Think about a cool TV or movie character like Don Draper. Doing this with a friend is really fun. Embody in their voice, demeanor, and mannerisms. Become them for a night and go talk to people. This gives you permission to be eccentric and to even fail, because it's not you, it's them. If you have an uncomfortable or awkward experience, people are dealing with the character. They aren't rejecting you. How about laugh it off? You can do this by yourself or with a friend. Say the silliest stuff you can imagine in your head that makes you giggle. Act like a goofball and psych each other up. People watch and make humorous or absurd observations. This isn't to be mean-spirited. It just takes the seriousness out of the situation. You could also distract yourself when going out, like listen to music with headphones, take photos of buildings and nature's window shop. Think about what you want to make for dinner. Brainstorm ideas for a new project. Make a mental checklist of errands for the day. Don't focus on approaching someone until the second you're about to approach them. See, that's the distraction. If you're playing this mind game over and over again where you're thinking, oh my gosh, in 2 seconds, I'm going to have to run up to them and I'm going to have to talk to them, that could be terrifying. So before you get to that point, maybe distract yourself. Follow the yes or no rule. Along with distracting yourself before approaching, don't agonize over the approach when you see someone. Staring at someone for 10 minutes while cycling through your fears is paralyzing. Instead, bypass that completely. See the person you want to talk to? Yes. Tie the word yes to just taking steps forward. No? Go the other way. This way, you won't have enough time to make excuses and talk yourself out of it. Don't approach after 3 seconds. If you see someone you want to approach and you can't, after 3 seconds, just walk away. It's not a big deal. Don't agonize over a missed opportunity. Don't beat yourself up about being a failure. It's demotivating and reinforces a belief of scarcity. There isn't a finite amount of people to talk to. You just didn't approach one person. There will be another chance in 2 minutes. Live with a mindset of abundance. Just commit to trying again with the next opportunity. Make social exercise a part of your weekly routine. Join a gym, but before you stick the headphones in, say hi to just a few people. Join a book club. You are exercising your mind and you have built-in conversation, the book. Want to get outside? Join a hiking or biking club. Find something you're interested in and then explore. You can explore where those people engage and like to hang out. Volunteering is mutually beneficial. It's an amazing way to connect and serve. Build time into your schedule and explore ways to give back to your community. I know a woman who is actually homeless. She lives in a shelter. She has spent her life volunteering. She works in a couple of aspects at the shelter, in the pantry and also, I think, in the clothing area. She talks about it all the time, of how it gives her an opportunity to connect with so many people who are hurting and some who just need to reach out and communicate. She feels blessed to have this opportunity. What a wonderful way to use her time that really helps her just as much as she's helping someone else. The idea is to realize you have the power to change your circumstances today. It's up to you to harness the power and channel it in the right direction. Let's go back to that article in Prima for a minute. We have genetically evolved to experience the tangible benefit of human connection, like an increased feeling of belonging, purpose, happiness, self-worth, and confidence. Studies across all mammals show that our well-being depends on our communications with others. Because of how we are wired to experience social pain and pleasure, meaningful human connection is a necessity, not a luxury. There's a region in the brain called the medial prefrontal cortex that sits between our eyes, and it's activated when we self-reflect. Several studies show that the same region of the brain is activated when we are influenced by the beliefs of others around us. When we're sharing with others, what this means is that that part of our brain enables the social influence, desiring connection and harmony. Even our memory is impacted by social networks, suggesting that motivation and retention is stronger with a relationship as the driver, rather than individual achievement. Research shows that children learn more effectively when their motivation is to teach someone else, as opposed to just learning to take a test. On so many levels, we are programmed to connect to those around us. According to the UCLA Professor Matthew Lieberman, being socially connected is our brain's lifelong passion. The importance of human connection for survival, it's the basic need to form, grow, and sustain relationships and to belong to a group, team, or family. It's universal. Now more than ever, we all need regular human interactions. Loyal relationships, dependable emotional support, and a feeling of belonging. Whoever we are, wherever we are. I'm so passionate about groups. Groups are a great way to connect and be heard. And it's so important for us to be heard. There are groups out there for everything. Like I mentioned earlier, you could join a particular group, you know, something that has an area of focus, like a book club or a bike club or something of that nature, a workout club. a running club. Or you could just find a group, an empowerment group, where you can go. Maybe it's got a topic. The groups that I run typically have a topic each week. But it gives you a chance to be a part of something. And that's something that we all crave. One thing I've learned about group dynamics, and I know I've mentioned it on the show before, but you start developing this pack mentality, you know, this chance to support each other, encourage each other. Even if you come into the group upset and not really in a position to share, you find energy and encouragement from your group members. You know, people lifting you up, caring about what you're doing, offering ideas. It's such a wonderful way to explore different options that you might have to overcome some of life's challenges, to find some positive alternatives. Find a group. Don't go it alone. How can you make a difference? Ask yourself that. Sit down and think about that. How can you make a difference? My friend who lives in the homeless shelter, you know, she may be in a position that needs help, but in turn, to get help, she's giving help. Where can you notice a need for connection? Thank you for sticking with me tonight as we talk about reaching out, staying connected. Get off your devices. Put them down. Put them away. I know there's been so much talk about going out with friends and having a device-free dinner, as if we need to even say it that way these days. You know, it's where we're blurring these lines, what's appropriate and what's not appropriate. But more so than the appropriateness of it are the dangers of not staying humanly connected to another person. And that's what I'm so passionate about. We need to push back against these ideas of independence and isolation and how you don't need anyone. You could stay in your house and order your groceries and chat with people online and watch movies and stream music and not be a part of the life around you. Convenience doesn't necessarily mean good. It's just convenient. Doesn't mean that it's going to help us nurture our relationships. So I don't like to bash technology. I just like to challenge it. We need to look at our relationships that we have in our life today. Where are they? Think about when you were young and hanging out with your friends and what happened as life happened. What happened to those relationships? Maybe it's time for new relationships, and that's amazing. Where do you meet people? Think about it. What are you into? What are you interested in? Is it a community organization? Is it church? Is it school? Is it socially out at events? Is it listening to music? Is it about physical exercise? Is it about education? Think about all the areas that you're interested in and take a step out. We talked about those different exercises you could use to get over your fear. You know, some people aren't social butterflies. That's okay. My mother said I never met a stranger in my whole life, and that's true. I also love to make eye contact. Some people avoid it. You know, if you're used to looking at a screen all day or staying in your cubicle or, you know, just being by yourself, you might find eye contact and reaching out to another person terrifying. Start slow, but exercise that. Don't lose that ability. There are more people that want to connect than you could even imagine. Some of them are just waiting for you to take the first step because they lack the exercise. Their social muscles have atrophied through all the digital and just the way that the world is moving into this independent communication type realm. You have an opportunity to break through that. Be different. Say hi to someone. Isn't that strange that saying hi to someone on the street is being different? But in this day and age, it may catch someone off guard. Oh, wow, they just spoke to me. But that's a good thing. That gets them going. That sends out your positive energy in their direction, makes them take notice and look at life a little differently. You have that ability to impact everyone you encounter. Don't waste that ability. It's so important. Pitch in. Volunteering is a great way to connect with other people. And serving others is a way to nourish your soul. Find an area in your community that you could help out, whether it's, you know, feeding the homeless or, you know, helping in some community organizations, maybe being a mentor to a young person, maybe helping the elderly, you know, maybe doing errands for the elderly or sitting with them, reading with them. Reach out, find your own Wanda Mills. Take a look in your neighborhood and see if there's someone that you might be able to reach out to and be proactive. Be intentional. Knock on their door, send them a letter, put something in their mailbox, leave some flowers on their back doorstep, bake a pie, share a book. So many different ways that we can reach out. You don't know if they're busy? Maybe stick a note on their door that said, "I would love to connect." Leave a response here. You know, you don't have to share your number right away. You could start slow. Be creative. Find different ways. And most importantly, just notice people. We're so busy walking with our heads buried down on a mission, on our way somewhere. We're always going somewhere. We jump in the car, we get out, we just go. And we don't take the time to notice the people around us, in our community, our neighbors. Someone once said to me that garage door openers were something that prevented them from staying connected to neighbors. And at first I thought, really? I've never heard that before. But think about it. You come home, you drive in your driveway, you click your garage door opener, it goes up, you go in, it goes down, and you enter the house. You know, before you might pull into a carport or a regular garage, and you would get out, maybe go get your mail, pick a few weeds. Neighbors are out on their porch. You say hi. Kids are playing in the street. You say hi to them. It was more, you know, neighborhood-oriented, family-oriented. You know, now we see other families during sporting events. And even though that's great, we're getting out of the house. We're doing something physical. But when those seasons end, so do those relationships. How can we keep that going? How can we build on that and widen our circle, our social circle, our network of friends and confidants and acquaintances? We could even build on our network of acquaintances. It's so good when you need someone to know where to turn. So I challenge you, notice the world around you and those who are suffering. Make it your mission to connect and offer encouragement, guidance, and friendship. Plug into what truly matters and share your light. I know you can do it. Thank you for listening to Encouragementology with Kendall Boyson, where we find positive ways to handle some of life's challenges. Someone threw into the past was 10.